Welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. You can get anything you want up there regarding John Deere. You can get tractors, mowers, implements, even parts and service. They do it all. Give them a call. Phone number is 530-226-9226. Or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. And you can't miss them. Got a big Pape sign there on Twin View with lots of green equipment in the yard. So go up and talk to them.
There you have it. Yeah, but if you're going to mow, don't do anything dumb.
Yeah, you better have rubber blades if you're going to mow.
It's fire time. We don't want to have any more fire in our fire time. All right, so today is July 28th, 2024, just for context, in case we say stuff that, I don't know, when we play it later, it doesn't make sense. I remember we played one from during the Obama presidency in the Trump presidency, and the guest said something about how the president was a dope or whatever, and people went crazy. It's like, oh yeah, but it was a different guy. So the date does matter sometimes. Our guest today, we have two, actually. We have Claire Lopez, and we have Dr. Lyle Rapacki, and we split them up. So we have Claire in the first hour, and we have Lyle in the second hour. Claire sent me a fairly comprehensive list. I said, hey, what do you want to talk about? And it was like, everything in the whole world. The assassination attempt, Gaza, Biden, Harris, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, there's
I'm like, lots. Wait, we're going to do that in an hour? So Claire is the founder and president of Lopez Liberty, LLC, with a mission to alert Americans to national security threats, both international and from the Islamic movement and the Muslim Brotherhood and their Marxist collaborators in this country. She supported former acting ICE director Tom Homan and Tom Trento in Defend the Border, the United West, and was an instructor for John Guandano's Understanding the Threat into Action program and its online National Security Academy. In mid-2023, Lopez offered expertise as National Security Advisor to U.S. presidential candidate Bishop Jackson. She also is also a senior advisory board member and director of U.S. geostrategic security issues for Near East Center and for Strategic Engagement. Served as an advisor and mentor to Special Forces students in the fall of 2020 DOD course. And from 2014 to 2020, she served as VP for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy. She's been doing a lot of stuff. Claire's a busy bee. She I have a huge long bio for her on here, and she's got all sorts of interesting background with the CIA and all sorts of stuff. So Claire's an expert on a lot of stuff. That's why we like having her on. Is she our hostage? Is she our hostage yet? She is. Yay!
I apologize for my scratchy voice.
That's okay. I have one, too.
Under the weather here today.
Oh, sorry to hear that. I sprung my knee, not my voice, so I guess I'll limp and you can sound scratchy.
Oh, he needs a fife.
All right, Bill, you're on fife. So, Claire, you sent me a really long list of possible things we could discuss. So I'm gonna just let you pull the ripcord and start wherever you'd like.
Well, I guess I would start in the Middle East because just yesterday a most horrific rocket attack took place on a soccer field.
Yes.
In a Druze town called Majid al-Shams, a Druze town in the Golan Heights in upper northern Israel. 12 children were blown to bits. Dozens more were injured. Both Secretary of State Antony Blinken and the Israelis as well have identified Hezbollah as the source of that attack, and it looks like there will be repercussions from that.
Do you think there really
there
will?
Have to be.
Yeah, I mean, we always think there have to be, but then
not always, right? Israel usually.
Israel will have repercussions. Do you think we'll provide some repercussions for that?
Well, I mean, the important thing for the United States, I think, is that we, you know, our Secretary of State, our National Security Advisor, and President Biden, to the extent that he's still involved, provide all the assistance, all the military hardware, all of the supplies that Israel needs as fast as it needs and whatever quantities it needs. Because this is a fight for Israel's existence. And indeed, I mean, a fight for Israel's existence is a fight for our own.
Well, Hezbollah is a much more formidable foe than Hamas. I mean, they have a rather large army, don't they?
A very large army, yes, indeed, as well as a very large arsenal of rockets and missiles, a lot of them now fitted out with precision guidance packages sent from Iran that could make them able to reach many places in Israel. So it's a very serious situation, yes.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to sort out what's going on over there, if you were going to decode that for somebody, since we obviously have a lot of people who are easily led, and they think that these guys are under attack, that Israel is the one being the aggressor. Lots of comments to that, but where would you start with that?
Well, I mean, I guess I would probably start with the Hamas covenant. That's its foundational document from 1987, and in that document, in the opening lines, it says Israel exists and will continue to exist until Islam, not Hamas, until Islam obliterates it as it has others before it. Point to that. There's all you need to know about motivation, intent, and you realize that it is not just Hamas, then, that is part of this commitment to the destruction of the Jewish state of Israel, but its sponsor in particular, which is the Islamic Republic of Iran regime in Tehran. And that regime backs, supplies, arms, funds, trains, not just Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which is likewise in the Gaza Strip, but also Hezbollah and the Houthis and so many other Islamic jihadi groups across the Middle East. And then you look at history and you realize this has been going on for 1,400 years.
Yeah.
It's not something new. It's not something that just came on our radar, you know, some months ago, which it did, of course, with the horrible October the 7th, 2023 Shabbat massacre, invasion by Hamas of Israel. But this has been going on far longer than that and will continue to go on until they're stopped.
Wow. How do you see this? I mean, is there an endpoint that you can see? Like, if you were in charge of, you know, or you were advising, what would you advise them to be doing?
Well, there is a citation from the Quran, which, of course, all Muslims believe is the literal word of God, Allah. And that line says something to the effect of jihad must be fought by Muslims. All Muslims, in one form or another, not always guns and bombs, but maybe speaking, maybe writing, maybe financing, any of the above, unless and until the circumstances become such that it's impossible for them to continue fighting jihad. And then they are obligated to stop it, at least until they then think themselves capable of starting it up again. We need to get them to the point of thinking that jihad is impossible.
Do you think this recent attack is... do you think Hezbollah did this to kind of goad Israel into a response so they can escalate this thing into a bigger conflict?
You know, I'm not sure about that, because up until now, and really since October of last year, it has seemed that the Islamic Republic has been holding Hezbollah back. Yes, they lob rockets and missiles and drones on a regular basis, but it seemed, at least, that they were not crossing some final line of an all-out offensive. Now, neither is this, and maybe they did not realize exactly where that those rockets, there were something like 30 of them, would land. They just, you know, shot them off, and they went where they went. So it may be that it was not intentional, per se, to hit this children's soccer field where the kids were playing soccer. But the regular tempo of attacks by Hezbollah it has not let up since last October. Whether they've now crossed the line, I think they probably have. It's children. It's kids. They were playing soccer on a field, and 12 of them were blown to bits. Children and many others, up to, I thought the number that I saw was 30 others injured. How many may, you know, survive or not survive, we don't know. But it could be that Hezbollah has now crossed a line that even Tehran might not have wanted it to cross at this particular moment. I think that Tehran is holding, has been wanting to hold Hezbollah in reserve for the time when Israel will have to counter Iran's nuclear weapons program. And at that point, that's what Hezbollah is for.
Mm-hmm. Did they, I didn't follow a lot of that. I didn't have a chance to. Did they make an excuse for yesterday? I mean, did they?
No, it's interesting.
Miss their target or, you know, oops?
No,
or?
No. In the beginning, like right after the attack, Hezbollah's statement said that wasn't them. They didn't do it. Well, duh. Of course they did it. So then, you know, they kind of had to backpedal. It's undeniable now that you know, barrage of rockets came from Hezbollah. So I'm not quite sure how they'll spin it. This literally happened yesterday, so we're one day after here now. And there were, oh my goodness, thousands and thousands and thousands of Israelis in the streets for the funerals of these 12 children killed. And I think everybody knows that there has to be a very severe response from Israel. I don't know exactly where it's going to go, but this, I think, very much does cross a line. And there's no denying it was children. The photos are grisly. I don't know if you've seen any of them, but it's just awful.
Well,
so
I think when you launch 30 plus rockets at somebody, your intent had to have been to kill people.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, it was children, and yeah. Maybe that's going to be the catalyst. But I don't think there was any doubt in anybody's mind that they wanted to kill people when they did that.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And they've been regularly shooting off, like I said, rockets, missiles, drones at these northern Virginia, northern Israeli communities. Sometimes in the Golan, sometimes in the Upper Galilee, on the border, just over the border from Lebanon into Israel. That's been going on for a long time. They didn't care. You're right. I mean, they meant to kill people, but they didn't, I think, they didn't realize that this particular barrage would slaughter so many children. I'm not sure that's what they would have done had they intended to do that. I don't think they would have intended to do that, that's what I'm saying. They would have, yes, shot them off at other, you know, villages, other townships and so forth. One of the important things about this, though, is that this village was a Druze village. And they have tried very hard to stay out of this conflict between Hezbollah and Israel. But now they are directly involved. It was their children, their village, Masjid al-Shams. And we're going to have to watch the reaction of the Druze, who do not put up with nonsense. I think this may pull them into this conflict.
Has there been any reaction from the other Islamic states over there?
I have not seen any yet. It could be that I haven't that I've missed it, but I have not seen anything yet, especially not from the Islamic Republic of Iran yet.
Mm-hmm. We have to take a really quick break. When we come back, can we carry this, but move it into some of the Gaza protests on this side?
Yes, let's do that.
Because that's just been crazy. Our guest is Claire Lopez. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Justice will be served and the battle will rage. This big dog will fight when you rattle his cage. And you'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. 'Cause we'll put a boot in your ass. It's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly. And it's gonna be hell when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell. And it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down.
It's a treacherous game. I won't be a pawn, a sucker for these lies. But I know when an angel is the devil in disguise.
Yes, it is a treacherous game. I thought I'd play us a little Toby Keith, though, because remember when we used to get angry about stuff like that? I mean, we used to do something about it. We even wrote mean music about it. It's like, huh, remember that? Now we just have a little blurb on, you know, CNN or whatever. It's depressing. So, Claire, what do you think about all this Gaza business here in the States? Uh-oh. Is Claire in the cone of silence?
Wednesday.
There you go.
I'll let you know that this past week, on Wednesday, I was actually downtown in Washington, D.C., on the day that Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu spoke to Congress, and all the crazies were out on the street vowing to citizens arrest Prime Minister Netanyahu. But the vibe was kind of strange. So it definitely was a mix of the red and the green. The red, communist, Marxist groups. The green, Islamic jihadi groups. Although I was also very surprised and taken aback even to see how many Jewish groups were there protesting against Prime Minister Netanyahu, including Jewish conservative Orthodox men in the full black with the black hats, and calling for his arrest. That surprised me. Mm-hmm. But during the day, and I was there the entire day long with some buddies, during the entire day long, from what we saw, it was not remarkably violent. It was raucous. There were, you know, lots of chanting. There was lots of chanting going on. Free Palestine, especially. And they had a stage set up in one of the sort of grassy areas downtown there, where they had set up a stage, and different speakers were there. Linda Sarsour and Susan Sarandon and you know, all the usual suspects. And you know, they ranted and raved against Israel and against the prime minister. But it was not until, I would say, and there were scuffles. There absolutely were scuffles on the front lines of some of these groups with where the police lines were. And we, as a matter of fact, saw two or three young men who had been pepper sprayed, and they were really burned. They were not in a happy state of mind. But for the most part, the scuffles were there, like at the point where the protesters met with the police lines. And speaking of the police lines, they did an amazing job Wednesday. They used those metal bicycle racks, you know what I mean, to erect barriers that, first of all, blocked off the entire Capitol building and the Capitol grounds. Nobody could get anywhere near the Capitol building. Very efficient. There were teams, by the way, in to Washington, D.C. from other places. We could see their, you know, their jackets and that from surrounding jurisdictions of Virginia, of Maryland. And also we know that New York City sent a contingent down. So there were lots of police and different, you know, security services, some of them decked out in full riot gear, including even gas masks. But they mostly were very good at channeling and blocking and even corralling these protesters. And they the police, the security services, were moving their barriers through the day as they learned where the crowds might be going next. And they channeled them, they blocked them off. And at one point, we even saw they had totally corralled them. They couldn't move. So, you know, kudos to
that's pretty good.
Only the combined, you know, police security forces, but also to Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, whose responsibility the security of the Capitol grounds building was. And he did a terrific job. Now, at the very end of the day, as a matter of fact, my friends and I were actually on a street corner waiting for an Uber to pick us up because the protesters had pretty much dispersed and gone away. The police forces themselves also had, you know, begun to disperse and go away. And then a bunch of demonstrators surged up to Union Station. Union Station is a great big and very beautiful train station hub in Washington, D.C., not very far from the Capitol building. And in front of the Union Station are flagpoles, and there are American flags, or the middle one's the tallest, I think, and that flew the American flag. I think the others might have flown the flag of the city, and I'm not sure, but the middle one was the flag of the United States. They tore that down. They stomped on it. They burned it on the ground. Of course, that is a felony. That is against U.S. law. And they scuffled with the very few police that I guess were actually left to come to that site. And we saw, you know, cars with the lights flashing and the sirens blaring headed up towards Union Station. But there weren't enough of them compared to the numbers of the protesters there. And it's there that you saw the most graphic photos, I'm sure, videos and photos of the day's events and you know, the burning of that flag and the scuffling with the police. There were arrests made, as I understand it, maybe around 20. They've all been let go, no charges, even though the assaulted police committed a felony with desecrating the United States flag and stomping on it and burning it on the ground. Those are felonies.
Oh, yeah.
They were all just let go.
Wow. Yeah, and that, obviously, January 6th, you know, when you had people, that was, you know, they were trying to take over the government and take over the country and all that. But this kind of stuff is not...
No problem.
Yeah, not the big a deal. What about all the, I guess, you know, having grown up back there, the whole spray painting all the monuments just absolutely pisses me off to no end.
Awful. There at Union Station, there's a plaza in front of Union Station, and that's where the flagpoles are. But there is also a monument there to Christopher Columbus. And it's that monument that you probably saw in the photos from the Union Station being spray-painted and covered with graffiti. Other monuments around downtown also were spray-painted and defaced. By the way, those are also felonies. But,
right.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, and I'm,
but nobody... Nobody got racked up for a felony on any of that.
No, I'm sure.
Not that
probably
I know of.
Most of them don't even know who Christopher Columbus is.
Well, then there's that. Hey, so, when you're walking around down there, I mean, is it? It seems like it would be, you know, like you wouldn't want to be walking around down there. Did you feel safe?
Well, here's the thing. As I was saying earlier, in the beginning of the day, early in the let's say afternoon, These different groups of protesters, the red and the green, the commie pinkos, the Islamic jihadi types, yes, they were waving those ugly red and black and white flags and chanting, you know, free Palestine, but they were not hostile. It had the vibe. It was very strange to me. It had the vibe of kind of like a hippie gathering, like a Woodstock or something. You had pink and purple hair. You had the nose rings, tattoos all over the place. But then they were actually nice, and they were handing out water bottles to people, like me.
Yeah. That's confusing.
I mean, I wasn't, you know, obviously defending anybody. I was just observing. But they were it was a strange vibe, and of course smoking marijuana might have had something to do with that. There was a lot of weed smoking going on too, so maybe they were a little mellow. It's legal in Washington D.C.
Of course, so that means you should do it, yeah, because that's how that works.
But that did contribute to sort of the vibe, the mood. I don't know.
Wow, that's. That's just sad. So how long did all that stuff, does it start at the, like in the morning, or did they all sleep in and show up at 10?
They were supposed to be gathering at 11 a.m. local time Eastern.
Okay.
And when I was talking about the final actions up by Union Station, that was somewhere around 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, something like that, if I remember right.
So kind of banker's hours for the desecration of the Capital City.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Wasn't really sure what the protocol was for that kind of thing. God dang. How did we get here? How many of them were there? I mean, was this just over the place, or did it just look big on the news?
I mean, we walked miles and miles and miles, actually trying to get to some place where we could see something because of the security, the police barriers every place. So many streets blocked off. But the signs, the advertisements that went out online and so forth earlier... talked about there's going to be 10,000 protesters, and we absolutely did see great big coach buses, you know, those big ones that hold 60, 65 people or so. We saw them rolling into town and people coming off the buses.
Wow.
So I don't know how many of those there were or where they came from.
So it was totally organic then?
Yeah,
they all just had the same idea on the same day and suddenly got on a bus together.
No, I mean, the internet was full of this weeks ahead of time.
Okay.
And it looked as though ANSWER, you know, the communist group, anti-war, stop war, whatever the rest of it is.
I didn't know there was such a thing. Okay.
They seem to be the organizers of all the other groups, at least online.
Okay.
It looked like they were the ones that were organizing it.
So what do they think? Do you have any sense of that? Like, what do they think Israel should do? Just let Gaza bomb them and take the place over and just roll over and die?
Yes. And here's the crazy thing about those Jewish, very observant, Orthodox men that we saw. They have the idea. Now, this is unique to them and their group. But their idea is that the Messiah has not come yet, and the Messiah cannot come until the nation state of Israel no longer exists. And at that point, the Messiah will usher in an Israeli state. But he can't come.
So hurry and destroy Israel so we can save it.
It's bizarre. I mean, just bizarre.
Huh.
But others, yes, they want Israel to be gone. I mean, when you chant from the river to the sea,
yeah.
And yes, we ask people, they have no idea which river or which sea. They have no idea the geography at all. It could be the Amazon for all they know.
Right. Wait, it isn't?
What they mean, whether they realize it or not, is that Israel should be gone. And in its place, not a two-state solution, no, but rather no Israel and yet another Arab-Muslim terrorist state.
But then you have the other guys who think if they destroy Israel, that the whole place becomes Israel. Like the Messiah comes and then...
The Jewish Orthodox.
Right. Wow, that's kind of like burning your house down for the insurance, kind of, a little bit.
I do not understand that, but that is what I was told. It was explained to me.
That actually, you know, in a scary way, that actually makes sense. I've never figured out what those groups were after, but that does make sense. So I guess if you...
Not to my way of thinking, but okay.
No, but I mean, that does, in a twisted way, make sense, and it also proves the idea that if you go far enough right, you wind up on the left, and conversely, far enough left, you wind up on the right.
See, so I don't even use
they all
terms
are.
Like right and left anymore. They're useless.
No, but
you
would think that the Hasidic community would be a little less into. I don't know. Wow,
these are their beliefs.
Yeah.
I did not realize this really until a short while ago, when Jewish friends of mine explained it.
Huh. Well, that's enlightening to the point, like, I think we better take a break.
Wow.
And I found some music for the protesters. I thought we should have like an ode to protesters here on this little break, just to, you know, make us less angry. And we'll be back. Our guest is Claire Lopez. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I was a rebel from the day I left school. Grew my hair long and broke all the rules. I'd sit and listen to my records all day, with big ambitions of when I could play. My parents taught me what life was about, so I grew up the type they warned me about. They said my friends were just an unruly mob, and I should get a haircut and get a real job. Get a haircut and get a real job.
Who is it?
You could get a haircut and get a real job.
Yeah.
That'd help.
That'd help it. So, Claire, kind of shifting gears here a little bit, let's talk about Kamala. And what do you think her impact is going to be, or lack of, on the Middle East and foreign relations if she gets anywhere near the White House?
It would be a disaster for Israel, a disaster for the United States. Hopefully, she will not even be the candidate for the Democrat Party, but even were she to become that candidate, I think Donald Trump, especially in any debates that are held, I think he would pretty much clean the floor with her. She has a vision of the Middle East, which is not based in reality. She doesn't know the history, even, you know, some of the things we've just talked about right here today. She doesn't know these things. She is part of, I guess, the group that divides the world into oppressors and oppressed. And in her mind, well, mind in air quotes, the oppressors
heavy on the air.
Are the West, the United States, anybody with pale skin, while the oppressed are anybody else who you know might not be getting what they want in jihad. So she sympathizes with the jihadis. I don't know if she's ever been to Israel. Maybe she has, but of course I've been there multiple times. And number one, Israelis are not fair-skinned. For the most part, they are Semitic people. They've been Semitic people for the last 3,500 years, but she doesn't know that either. Yes, some of those who emigrated, let's say, from Europe, from Eastern Europe, Ukraine, from Russia after World War II, were what's called Ashkenazi Jews, and some of them are lighter-skinned. But that's not how you assess foreign affairs. Dark skin, light skin. That's not an accurate way to conduct foreign affairs. If you're the United States of America, it's bizarre. It's upside down. It's crazy. But it's based, I think, on a profound ignorance of the history of the Jewish people, the history of the Middle East, the history of that whole region, and the history of Islam, which founded, of course, in the 7th century, many, 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 many centuries after the Jewish people had already made their nation state in the Middle East, where Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob settled. That's in the Bible, and where, David and Solomon established a nation state. And this is hundreds and hundreds of years before Christ. But she doesn't know that. And I guess a lot of other people like her in the current Biden administration are likewise clueless. That's all I can conclude. They have no idea.
It's a lot
and
of
what about
going around.
What about Russia and China? Does she know anything about those relationships and what their capacity and their plans and goals are for the United States?
She gets briefing papers from her staff, whatever's left of them. I think there were four left after 4 years out of a beginning total of 41, 42, for something, 40-something people. Oh, there were four left at the end. So she gets her briefing papers from them. And I don't know what their expertise is. I can't say. But that's where she gets, she doesn't do her own homework. She doesn't, she doesn't know from her own studies what the affairs are of the international scene, including Russia and China.
Well, it just seems like they're both kind of really pressing the envelope right now that, now that they know Biden's not going to be at the helm, and I'm just curious if that's going to change or if they think this is going to be their golden opportunity.
Well, I think that when rogue regimes like Putin's, like Xi Jinping's, like Kim Jong-un's, like the Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei's, when they perceive weakness in Washington, D.C., perceive weakness at the head of the United States government, they press ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think these next several months, what is it, five, six, until all the way till January, inauguration day of 2025, I think they are going to be incredibly chaotic, tumultuous, and dangerous because these other rogues see their window closing. They can read polls, too, for whatever the polls are worth, okay, but it does look, like President Donald Trump will be president again. And so they count these months as their last opportunity to do whatever wreak whatever mayhem they want to wreak while things are weak and just unsettled in Washington, D.C.
I mean, the sad part is if we know they're not going to do anything, our adversaries know they're not going to do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's not exactly a big mystery.
That's the assessment that these rogue leaders have made.
I have found it to be... I listen to progressive radio all the time when I'm driving, and the last couple of weeks I drove a lot, and so I was listening to I listened to these guys before Biden bailed out, and then after, and it was just funny. You know, the one week Biden was going to save everybody, he was totally fine. The right wing they were monsters, talking about Biden not being able to do it, blah blah blah. Who else could possibly step in that would be any good? And then suddenly, the next week, Kamala Harris, she's going to save the world. And we've always, I mean, they actually said, we have always wanted her to run, and we're just so grateful. And then one of them brought up the laugh, right? The evil right wing, they make fun of her laugh. And the other lady gasps right on cue and says, I'm just so offended by that. She is so secure in her person that she is sharing her inner joy with all of us. I feel so blessed to be able to share her inner joy.
Oh, my.
And I was like, wow, you know, sarcasm makes me happy. Maybe that's my inner joy. I better share that more. That's my new excuse.
Well, I mean,
I'm just sharing my inner joy. There you go.
But, I think the other part of this that's very important for the campaign to make the point of is... That as vice president, Kamala Harris was part and parcel of the Biden administration.
Oh, all day.
And whatever responsibilities she was handed, including the border, were hers to deal with. And she made, you know, a complete wreck of everything.
Did she ever go to the border? Did we ever figure that out? Did she ever go there? I know she didn't go to Europe, but...
One time, but not right up to the border.
Like a drive-by?
I forget where it was, but somewhere... close by.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, I was in Eagle Pass last summer.
Oh, how was that?
At the time, it was pretty quiet, although we did see those great big white buses transporting the illegals across the bridge that connects Eagle Pass and on the Mexican side, Piedras Negras is what it's called. That bridge, they come across. And, you know, all they have to do is flash their little CBP One app, and they're loaded on the buses, and off they go to wherever they want in the United States. So we saw that, yeah. But we did not see, a lot of people, for instance, fording the river or something like that. We did not see that at that time.
Why go through all that trouble? Right? I mean, why?
Well, if you can just, yeah.
If you can just get on the bus,
the
right?
The cell phones are free. The CBP One app is automatic. And you're in.
Yeah. So with her, well, what do you think, just based on, you know, you've watched this stuff for a long time, do you think she'll actually wind up being the nominee, or do you think there's something else up their sleeve, too?
I really don't know. I mean, she's just such a train wreck. Every time she opens her mouth, excuse me, I don't know how they can go forward with her. Much less allow her to debate Donald Trump. I don't know. Of course, the convention is coming up in a few weeks in August, and we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure he's going to share some inner joy with her. I'm pretty sure it's going to make us all happy.
But, you know, I mean, at the moment, the Trump campaign has said, we're not even going to set a date until we know actually who's the candidate. Which she is not yet, even though she's got all these delegates supposedly in her column, until it's solidified, until it's confirmed that she is the Democrat Party candidate, there's not even going to be a set date for a debate.
God.
Yeah.
You've worked in foreign affairs and politics and all over the world and all these things. Can you... Like, is there a time when it's been this chaotic on this many fronts that you know of?
Not for the United States, no. No. Many other places, sure. But not for the United States. Absolutely rudderless, leaderless, drifting. drifting.
Wow.
And then, of course, there was the Olympics yesterday in Paris.
Yeah, what the heck? I didn't see it, but it was all over, everywhere.
They've taken down the horrific opening ceremony with all those pedophiles and perverts. They've taken it down from YouTube. The Olympic Committee, has taken it down. It was so awful. I mean, they got lambasted all over the world.
Well, I understand a lot of people are boycotting the Olympics over that incident. It was so outlandish and vile. I can't believe they
just unbelievably vile.
They're allowing the men to, you know, compete in the women's sports. I don't see how that's. I mean, how can you be proud of a medal if you beat a woman and you're a man in their sport?
Yeah. Oh, they don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care. It's not about being proud.
Yeah, there is no pride.
The podium,
pride is gone. It's just a slogan in a month.
Yeah.
It's June now.
Yeah. Right.
Unbelievable.
All right. So you had sent me a we'll call it an exhaustive list of potential things that we could chat about. And one of them was the assassination attempt. So we have, like, you know, 3 minutes or whatever.
Oh, geez.
You know, you want to cram that in the last 3 minutes?
Well,
what's your take on that?
I think that is the investigation into that is still ongoing. Obviously, it was a catastrophic level failure of the Secret Service, which no matter how many local police units they might delegate responsibility to for whatever tasks, it's their responsibility in the end to make sure that everything goes right, and they didn't do that.
Yeah. Have you? I mean, I realize we've had presidents, you know, shot and killed, you know, assassinated in the past. But in your time, have you seen? It just seems like all our systems are on, you know, are on fail.
Everything is collapsing. Yes, I agree. We've got to get leadership back in the country. There's just, we can't go on like this.
Mm-hmm. Rudderless executive branch, I don't think people realize, you know, they want Congress to fix it, but at the end of the day, I mean, these agencies are under the executive branch, and when you have a president who's been AWOL for most of the time, some stuff, you know, some of the cheese slips off the crackers.
Well, I mean, it looks like the DEI hired director of the Secret Service, Kimberly Cheadle, who finally did resign, but she was AWOL as well.
Yeah. Wasn't it amazing? She thought she could just tell everybody, nope, that's, you know, we're going to look into it and I'm going to stay. It's like,
no.
Ma'am, you're so not going to stay.
I couldn't. Not after that.
So, who would you pick? Let's do Claire's picks. Okay, so who would you put in a chair first? Like, if you got to be president tomorrow, who would you reach out and grab? Let's assume they all say yes. And who would you assign first?
Well, I mean, I would like to see
or maybe even just what title.
Former director of the CIA, Mike Pompeo, come back. I would like to see a place in law enforcement, whether it's the Secret Service, maybe, for Dan Bongino. National security. I don't know. I mean, they're very excellent candidates, but the whole place needs a cleaning out right now.
Yeah, there needs to be a massive purge, and I really believe there will be. I think if Donald Trump wins this election, which I'm certainly hoping he does, I think he learned his lesson from last time.
Yes, I do too. I think he learned a lot over these last.
It's not a business. Just because you're the boss, they're not going to do what you say. And he needs to put his own people in there and get the job done.
Absolutely.
Sniping to bed. I mean, it's just out of control.
Do you think that would move the needle on the Ukraine Russia thing?
We'll have to see about that. You know, I don't want to see the policies of a Vice President J.D. Vance take the lead in a new administration. I mean, he would just throw Ukraine to the wolves and let Putin do whatever he wanted.
Yeah,
I don't think Trump would do that.
Hmm? I don't think he would either. Holy cow!
Trump wouldn't, but J.D. would.
We are out of time.
Okay.
Absolutely out of time. Claire, you can go deal with your sore throat. We thank you for coming on with us.
Thank you very much.
And we're going to have you back.
Thank you, guys.
Again, as soon as possible.
Our
guest has been Claire Lopez, and our next guest is Dr. Lyle Rapacki. And so I thought we'd throw a little out to the illegal immigration front. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Episode of We the People Radio. Actually, it's not the other episode. It's the other half of the episode.
Yeah.
Just to be clear.
Round two.
Just round two, right? Because we got Lyle, so we gotta get our little comedy hats on. So it's, let's see, July 28th, 2024. Still. In our first hour, we had Claire Lopez with us. Second hour, we have Dr. Lyle Rapacki. He's been on so many times that he has his own tab on the website. It's the laughing. Yeah. It's the laughing that works for us.
Let me just butt in right here. And
yeah.
Say, I introduced Claire Lopez to you.
I know, and then we took her.
Yeah, and now I'm playing second fiddle.
Yes, which is a testament to my incredible skill.
I love Claire, and I have, oh my gosh, we've known each other quite a few years. We've spoken together on many occasions across the nation. We've briefed many people. She's the real deal. So I'm sure your folks, your audience, really got a good insight. But
well,
I still don't understand why I'm second.
She responded first, actually. That's just the flat fact of it. But when she wrote back and she goes, well, let's see, because I said, like, oh, what do you want to talk about? She goes, well, we could talk about U.S. foreign policy or the Trump assassination or the Biden pullout from the presidential campaign or the Harris campaign or on the trail and then Israel. Then we could talk about Hamas. And I was like, yeah, okay, well, that's going to take like 2 hours. I'm not calling Lyle. And then she goes, oh, I can only stay out for an hour. I'm like, oh, I'm calling Lyle.
She's the real deal.
Yeah, she's a smart cookie.
I love her as a sister, and but I thought it was hilarious when you texted me and said, hey, do you mind just filling in for the second hour? We have Claire at first.
And then I said, oh, and you have to, because I sent you a funny Seinfeld book for Christmas, but I didn't mail it till March, but you still got it already.
It's right here, Seinfeld, The Day of Nothing. It is a phenomenal book about nothing.
Because for years we've been talking about doing a show about nothing, and then we always talk about real things and blows our whole program. But
well, Pape Machinery.
Oh, yeah, we skipped them this hour. Oops.
Why are we skipping? No.
We didn't mean to. We just sort of shot right past Bill. Bill, do you want to go into what do you call it? Sponsorship?
No. You've robbed me of my joy now. I might pick it up at the half hour, but right now I'm kind of in shock that happened.
Well, then I'll wait. I'll pull back.
I was telling Claire that on Progressive Radio I learned that Kamala doesn't have a cackle. It's she is sharing her inner joy with us, and we are incredibly blessed to have her do that. And so when you hear her cackle now, just know that is her inner joy. And, she's sharing it with us.
You know, we're off to a good start already in this second hour with the junior varsity of about nothing.
That's
right. So I just
heavy on the Shazam.
So you've got listeners over in Benghazi or someplace. I don't know where they're
all. And they're like, wait, what are they talking about?
Yeah, they're like, what is this about? No.
So we've done this so many times, I didn't even bother to find out what we were talking about, because I figured, well, we'll just figure it out as we go. What did I call this? What did I call your segment? I looked up the wrong one. Sorry. Yeah.
It's actually, if you listen very closely, it's all in code. So our listeners.
Oh, yeah. So I called it Arizona Update with Dr. Lyle Rapacki.
Oh, so this is secret squirrel stuff.
Pretty much. Well, I know you guys are always brewing stuff on the election-ness.
We're always brewing.
There's always brewing on the election-ness over there in Arizona land.
Well, you know, I just had on my... I'm doing two shows nowadays. I'm doing Arizona Today, and people can go to that website, Arizona, lowercase, arizonathenumber2day.com, arizonatoday.com, and you'll see that I took a couple of months leave because I started a new show called Yavapai Speaks, and you can get that through Prescott E-News. Just go to Prescott E-News on the...
Oh, isn't that where you started? Isn't that where it all began?
Boy, you've got a good memory. Yeah, 4 years, four or five. Wow, time flies. Yeah, 5 years ago, four, sorry, guys. And I did the legislative, I coordinated the legislative hearing in November 30th of 2020 when Mayor Giuliani came to Arizona, came to Phoenix, and it was a whole day of testimony on election fraud. And that was the election of 2020 that was stolen. And I coordinated all that. And about 6-7 months later, I coordinated the next joint legislative hearing in Oral Valley, which is south of Phoenix. So I was writing some commentary for Prescott E-News, and they asked me, would you do a podcast? And me being so sophisticated, I go, what's a podcast? I had no idea what a podcast. And so they worked through that with me after some giggles, and I started Arizona Today. And it took off by God's grace. And all kidding aside, people know what I'm saying because they've seen the evidence. It was after 2 weeks, let's say, two, three, it was taking 5 hours a day to open the mail. I am not making this up. Five hours a day. There was so much mail.
So you didn't even notice that my book didn't come at Christmas time? You wouldn't have gotten to it till March anyway. I did leave the Christmas wrapping on. I got a chuckle out of that.
Way to go, Aaron. Good thing. and so the Arizona Today started, you're right, with Prescott E-News. And then I branched off from Prescott E-News on purpose. It was not no big deal. Because I needed to do some things and go some places with it. It continued to grow. Well, 4 months ago, the publisher, the owner of Prescott E-News, asked if I would come back and do a show, and I'd have free reign. So we started 6 weeks ago with Yavapai Speaks at Prescott E-News, and I'm focusing on Yavapai County, but not just so completely that I'm not dealing with Arizona issues or even national issues. But as anything, you guys know this really well, you start a program, it doesn't just start in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. It takes good several weeks to kind of iron out bugs and get things going and start to get viewers. So that's where we're at. We're at 7 weeks now. Yes, what is today? Sunday. Oh, on Friday, on Yavapai Speaks at Prescott E-News, I had Michelle Burchill on. Michelle is the recorder for Yavapai County, and we were discussing election integrity. And you'll see it. That whole show is like 24 minutes, no commercials. And she talks about the steps that she has deliberately taken and where her values are when it comes to election integrity. And I said on the show a couple of times, I've known Michelle going on 2 years. I've been in private meetings where we've worked on election security issues, and she's the same. This is not some public persona she's promoting. She is very dedicated. And she is not going to put up with any shenanigans or whatsoever. And she even talks on the show, and I won't give it away. Somebody said that they got two ballots, and she was on top of that, like, oof. And she wrote them, she called them, and it turned out not to be. It was not a mistake by the recorder's office. It was a mistake by the citizen and how they interpreted something. But she will get on the phone personally. She's got a nice sized staff, but she takes this seriously. Now, I tell you this because the other 14 counties in Arizona only has 15 counties, the recorders have really watched and talked with her about what she has done in Yavapai County. For those listening, Yavapai County is north of Phoenix by about an hour. It's in Prescott. And they are wanting to copy her, and some already have. Now, it goes even beyond that. Across the country, a number of county recorders and election officials have already reached out to her to see what can be done. Now, I lay that out there because on my Arizona Today show on Thursday, I recorded Tina Peters. Tina is the county recorder, if you will, in Grand Junction, Colorado. She is facing 7 felony charges because, you ready for this?
Okay.
She reported, how dare she, reported that there was election fraud, election security issues to the county supervisors, the county attorney, the governor of Colorado, and others. And they couldn't get her to shut up. So they have now filed 7 felony charges against her, looking at 30 to 35 years in prison instead of addressing the issues. So on Tuesday, this Tuesday, her trial begins in Colorado, and it will be aired nationally, by the way, on Truth Social, I think it is. But Tina Peters is the recorder in Colorado who's fighting the fight up there because there was tremendous election fraud.
And so what was the excuse they used to put her, you know, to make her have to go into a trial and everything? What are they accusing her of? Hurting their feelings? Is that a thing now?
It's pretty much that way. That she drummed up things, that she hid documents, that she invented documents, that she did all sorts of forgery things, which is hilarious in one sense, in a macabre sense of the word, because she reported to various officials and took in examples, and by God's grace, she took stuff away for safekeeping. Otherwise, it would have been destroyed, because they've done everything they can to destroy evidence, much like what Maricopa County, Arizona did when we uncovered it in 2020. Maricopa County, absolutely corrupt, and the people running it, the supervisors, county supervisors or county commissioners, however you call them, were very complicit in the cover-up of election fraud in Arizona. And it has been pointed out, it's been proven, and they're still not recanting. They've done everything they could in Maricopa County, and very similar in Colorado. Her case in Colorado is very similar to what happened in Phoenix, Maricopa County, and then also down in Tucson, Pima County, which is the Tucson Oral Valley area.
I know in 2020, you, or thereafter, you were very active in exposing a lot of the fraud that went on. Has anything really been done since then to prevent that level of fraud from happening again?
Well, that's a great question, and if I had been on for the first hour, we may have had time to discuss.
Oh, and there it is. Okay. There it is.
No, I'm sharing. I'm sharing in the circle of trust.
Right.
So Bill, I know you didn't make the decision because I did not get an email text from you. I got it from
that woman at Bill's house.
And she mitigated it all by lauding how wonderful the book was she sent me, and
yep.
I hope I enjoyed it, and just, you know, you're such a great person, and by the way, you're junior varsity, so you're on second out.
Lyle, that's called working it.
And you did, Aaron. Miss Aaron.
Yeah, I was working it.
Bill, wow. When's our Pape commercial?
Now we made it weird.
Because some things, yes, there have been some changes, positive, but there's still very serious concerns because there's been a lot of cover-up, a lot of denial. I coordinated that legislative hearing on November 30th, 2020. And, you know, preparing for that, we reviewed the documents, we reviewed the evidence, we reviewed the subject matter specialists who were going to testify. I did not have final say. The chairman of the joint legislative hearing and the vice chairman did. All kidding aside for 30 seconds, I was given about 95% leeway. There were a couple of things I did request or suggest that were overturned, but it was done privately. But I was given tremendous leeway from everything from putting little peppermints in front of each legislator in a glass of water to security to media. I coordinated all eight media channels or platforms, national media. They were conservative, like One America News, Breitbart, Right Side, stuff like that. So I was given tremendous latitude. I was very fortunate, very humbled to have tremendous latitude to see behind the curtain. So to your question, Bill, yes, that started a process by which for a good couple of years I was allowed to consult in the preparation of how to take this information and put it out. On my earlier shows of Arizona Today, and that's how that came about, is because people were clamoring for information. And the publisher, owner of Prescott News, said, why don't you do the podcast? I've already told you I didn't know what that was. We did it in studio at Prescott News, and it took off. And I was able to bring on Mayor Giuliani, Doug Logan, who ended up coordinating the forensic audit for Arizona, Phil Waldron, who is a national security and cybersecurity specialist, and others. And we discussed, we moved the curtain back, and I told the audience, I said, hang in there. Please be a little patient. I promise you, we will be moving the curtain back. But I have to also tell you, there are some national security issues and very sensitive issues, and we're going to have to go about this somewhat slow, not dilatorily, but slow, because it's so complex. What I can discuss now is that China was very involved in the overthrow of the election.
Hey, Lyle, hold that thought. We have to take a break, and I don't want to interrupt that.
Yes,
because that is important that we can talk about it. I didn't realize we get to talk about it now.
Are we doing Pape? Do I get to do my Pape commercial?
Darn it. Yes. I should have had it play the tractor song.
Get that script out I sent you.
We'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Lyle Verpacki, and you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Double wide quick stop, midnight tea top, Jack in her cherry coat town. Mama and daddy put their roots right here, cause this is where the car broke down. Yellow dog school bus, kicking up red dust, picking us up by barbed wire fence. MTV on the RCA, no AC in the vents. We were Jesus, Sammy, blue jean baby, born in the USA. Trailer park, truck stop, faded little map dots, New York to L.A. We were teenage dreaming, front seat leaning, baby, come give me a kiss. Put me on the cover of the Rolling Stone, Uptown, Down Home, American Kids. Growing up in little pink houses.
I thank God for my life, for the stars and stripes. May freedom forever fly. Let it ring. Salute the ones who die, the ones that give their lives, so we don't have to sacrifice all the things we love, like our chicken fries and cold beer on a Friday night, a pair of jeans that fit just right, and the radio. The light seems
even though I hate chicken. But it's not made out of chicken.
Yeah.
So I've allowed the song because it isn't really about chicken. All right, Lyle. So the Chinese wormed their way into the election.
Well, okay, they wormed their way, but they were more than just worming their way in. There is sufficient evidence that they coordinated with Dominion the... the compromising of the Dominion voting machines. They were involved. Cuba was involved. Venezuela was involved. There was a satellite involved. Hang in there for a minute. The whole idea of 1 o'clock in the morning thereabouts, you'll understand what I'm about to say. Were six states the voting systems went down because of a toilet overflow or a bucket of water.
Oh, yeah, right.
All the different. That was all pre-planned. It was all programmed. It was all part of the overall coordination so they could count how far Trump, how many votes Trump had versus Biden. And we know that we know that we know the evidence is there that especially in each of the six states, Arizona being one, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Georgia, I mean, I just go down the list. If Biden was behind, let's say, 10,000 votes, the water pipes broke, quote unquote, which they did not, by the way. Shut down the machines, sent everybody home. 3 hours later, or four, they reopened the counting, quote unquote, and voila, all of a sudden, Biden's ahead by 20,000 votes. We know that in New York, a truck was intercepted as it was getting ready to offload ballots, phony ballots. The driver came forward and testified. The same happened in other states. In Arizona, 75,000 ballots were never even counted to this day. So I can go down the list, and the evidence, not the opinion, was presented in November of that first joint legislative hearing. And then that created enough of a stir by which Arizona then held an emergency legislative hearing in the Judiciary Committee. They subpoenaed the Maricopa County supervisors and elections people. And they went, and that was on air, it was on TV. And you can watch the give and take, the back and forth, where the county supervisors or commissioners, if that's where you're from, denied, and then finally capitulated, said, yeah, you're right. Okay, we're going to look into this, and we're going to bring forward all the evidence and bring it before you, which they did not. They hid it. They tried to destroy it. They were caught. They were stopped. This just goes on and on and on. Now, what I can tell you is, and maybe for consideration, we do a show with Doug Logan. Doug Logan coordinated the forensic audit that took place. The forensic audit came about after both joint legislative hearings, the first one in November of 2020, and then, I may be wrong on this, guys, I apologize, 6-7 months later, we did it again in Oral Valley, just south of Phoenix, because additional evidence was presented. The evidence presented in the Phoenix hearing was discarded or done away with in such a fashion, it was shelved by the Attorney General of Arizona, Brnovich. Now, in his defense, it's going to sound like I'm contradicting myself, but in a little bit of a defense, we learned, not until later, that his chief deputy hid or kept certain documents and information from him.
Oh, so he was making a decision with part of the facts.
Correct, but we did not know that part. We knew that he had been furnished evidence, not opinion, and he did nothing with it, except, well, we're still investigating. Well, you know, after 6 months and all the evidence, and then we had another legislative hearing, and even more evidence came forward. And one of the things that they said to us is, well, we couldn't consider the evidentiary packet you gave us because they didn't follow chain of custody. Well, that was a crock. I was in charge of that also. So for the Oral Valley hearing, chain of custody means when you have a piece of evidence, who gets to touch it, who gets to see it. And each time it's seen or touched by someone outside of the actual lineage, law enforcement lineage, it could be jeopardized, it could be watered down, it could be compromised, it could be argued that something was changed. So I made darn certain that when a person testified, they got up from the testimony table, which was right in front of the legislators. I had two law enforcement people right there. They stood. Their testimony was put into a sealed bag held by law enforcement. They, the witness, and the two law enforcement officers walked out. I didn't follow them closely, but I followed out to make sure. and they went out of the room so the next witness could come and testify, and two other law enforcement people stood behind them. The first person being ushered out, they go into a side hallway that was secure. In other words, people couldn't get to it. There was other law enforcement. The bag that had been sealed was then transferred into another evidentiary bag. Signatures were made on the bags. Witnesses, which are law enforcement witnesses, co-signed it, showing that they witnessed the exchange. The bag was sealed in another bag, and I mean sealed. I'm not talking like you get the drugstore little sealing bags or something. It was zipped and locked. A flap was put over it that could not be opened, and if it was, you could see that it was violated. And then that was signed by the controlling officer, the handling officer. The handling officer was a law enforcement officer who held onto that bag. And then when the day's testimony was over, that same officer had all, I think there was six or five bags. And then all of that was transported directly by law enforcement to the Attorney General's office. So nobody, the legislators, nobody had access or touched any of that stuff. It was then transported personally and given to the Chief Deputy Attorney General the next day. We found out later that some of that never was seen by the Attorney General. This has gone on and on and on throughout courts. That's why you've heard cases about Kerry Lake and Mark Fincham and Abe Hamaday, who ran for Attorney General, appealing cases before the courts, and the courts refuse to take them, or they kick them out because there's insufficient evidence, blah, 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 blah. There is a part of a huge, and that would be a different show, believe me, conspiracy, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but we've uncovered tremendous evidence showing the complicity of it all, and the complicity of a number of people. There has been a coup, I will say, over the 2020 election. They did not think Trump would get in. He did. They were stunned. There was a day or two or a month or two in the initial Trump presidency. They didn't know what to do. The air went out of the room. But then they immediately started the work on everything from Russia to everything else to get rid of him. And they kept it up for 4 years. Come 2020, the election was absolutely compromised. There was a coup. And the way this information came about, we had a lot of information given during the hearing in Phoenix and then again in Oral Valley. But I had a gentleman call a senator, state senator, from out of state, and he said, "Do you know Dr. Rapaccio?" "Oh, yeah, we know him really well. We've known him 10 years. Can you get a message to him?" And they said, "Yes." So I get a message from a senator, and the message was, "Somebody from Georgia has information on the Dominion machines and this and that." And I was getting bombarded from all across the nation. Everybody had inside information.
Right.
And I thanked the senator. I said, "You know, you talk to the person." And so the senator calls the person back. The person said, "I understand what he's doing. He's probably being bombarded. I want you to tell him this, this, and this." Senator calls him back later that day, I believe it was, and said, "You know, Dr. Lyle, I need to tell you this, this, and this." And the phone, I went quiet, and I said, "Do you know this person?" "Well, yeah, I know of him, and I know it." "Okay, you have his phone number?" "Yes." So I called the person, and I said, you know, it'd be like calling Bill or Aaron. You guys are good. "Bill, this is Dr. Rapaccio in Arizona. I understand you called Senator Smith." I'm just making up the name. "And you gave information. Is that correct?" "Yes, it is." I said, "Okay, don't answer anything right now. I need to know, will you do a background? Can I do a background check on you? And I don't mean Facebook. I'm talking, is there anything from kindergarten I'm going to find out? Do you have a parking ticket that you didn't pay 30 years ago? Is there anything?" "No, sir." I said, "Give me your name, Social Security number, date of birth, and your residence." And he did. I said, "Okay, I'm going to ask you one more time. Is there anything I'm going to learn about you that?" And he said, "No, sir." He He then said, sir, I know what you're going to do, and that's perfectly fine with me. He goes, I am a National Guard, and he gave me his rank and all that. And he goes, I was in charge of all operations for the Dominion training. I said, what Dominion training? He said, here in this state, and he told me the state, Dominion did a training, a weekend, well, almost a four-day training. So that'd be a weekend, but a four-day training where they called in appropriate people in the electoral process from six states. Isn't that funny? Six states. And they were here all weekend, and they went through an entire mock electoral process. He said they scheduled the breakdown of the machines, the water problems, the toilet problem, whatever. It was all scheduled. they practiced how you can sit outside a voting center with a laptop and access the satellite and change the numbers. You can also make it so a vote comes in, it doesn't get tabulated, it doesn't get registered. So we went through an hour and a half of him explaining all of this to me in great detail. I said, thank you. Again, I'm going to ask you, is there anything that you've lied to me about, misled? I went through a whole list. He said, no, sir. I said, I want you to stand by. I will be calling you back. It might be an hour. And I did. And I said, so-and-so is going to be calling you. Excuse me, guys. So-and-so is going to be calling you. It was not Doug Logan. It was the national security person, the cybersecurity person. I said, this person is going to be calling you. He's going to use my name, and he's going to give you this code word. If none of that happens, you hang up immediately. If it does happen, I want you to tell this person everything you've told me. And he did. And this person went to his state, this guy's state, and he took an investigator with him, and they went up there the next day. They flew up, and they collected all this data, and they had it securely packaged and secure and transported back to their home state where they sat and reviewed it. Now, what happened then was it was all validated, and we gave that to President Trump's team, his senior people. And that's why you saw in early 2021 information going out and by several people, Mike Lindell and several others. And we needed to stop that. So we pulled the plug on it because it was too sensitive and we weren't sure exactly what steps were taken. And I tell you that whole story because that led to a couple of additional Senate hearings in Arizona, which led to the forensic audit, the first one in the nation's history, that Doug Logan coordinated. And since the forensic audit, what was learned is all of that turned out to be true. We also saw and learned how the machines were compromised, how they could be stopped, how the numbers could be changed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, Doug Logan is writing a book, and it will come out in October, I believe it is. And it's a tell-all book because not all that happened was reported. And I'll leave it at that. He did the forensic audit. He was not allowed to report certain things. And that's about to change come October. So what I would recommend to y'all as we can talk off air, and we work out a situation where and maybe Doug will not allow that until the book comes out. I don't know. I haven't talked about it. But that would be a fascinating show because there would be a lot of information that y'all have not heard.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, it'd be earth-shattering. There was a coup, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist. And I'm now 4 years later. I don't really have the patience for people who, and I admit it, I'm not proud, I'm just telling you, I don't have the patience for people to say, oh, that's a bunch of crap, and, you know, bye-bye, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go away. Right.
You know, I'm not saying I'm right for the listeners, I'm just telling you, for 4 years we fought this fight, and We are concerned that it's going to happen again here. I can tell you that having Tina Peters in Colorado fighting what she's fighting, Michelle Burchill here in Yavapai County, Arizona, down in Cochise County, Arizona, the Attorney General of Arizona, who's a socialist, and she's just completely a slob, you can quote me. She went after the county supervisors in Cochise County, that's down south of Arizona, and told them to cease and desist, that they had no right to not authorize the or certify the election. She's absolutely wrong, and she claims she's gone to law school, but I don't know what law school, JCPenney's or something, because under our Constitution, not Arizona, under the U.S. Constitution, and this was pointed out to our Arizona governor and others when they said, no, no, there's nothing we can do. And the Speaker of the House of Representatives in Arizona said, nope, there's nothing here. That is all under the 10th Amendment. Excuse me, guys, I have a frog. Under the 10th Amendment, the states have the authority to, because they're sovereign, they have the authority to certify an election. The legislature, the Senate, has the authority to authorize a recount, a recall, or to not authorize the election to certify it. And they tried to lie and say the Senate had no business, the legislature had no business, blah, blah, blah. Well, that was all proven wrong, and that's how come, even though the U.S. Congress and Senate went ahead and authorized the election of 2020, that's how the forensic audit came about in Arizona, the first one in the nation. 26 states came to Arizona. They sent delegations, legislative delegations, to observe what Arizona was doing. You must appreciate there was no rule book on this.
Yeah, right. It hadn't been done before. Hey, Lyle, we'll give you 5 seconds to get the frog out of your throat, and then we've got to take a really quick break.
Drink.
Don't we all?
Oh, I'm going to have a maker's mark.
Yeah, there you go.
That'll do
we
it.
All need a drink. So I forgot to do a little shout-out to the Olympics, so I got them covered in this break, too, for you, just for your listening pleasure. But we'll go out with just a regular song about bad people who screw up elections. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Speak of the devil, the devil appears, waiting for someone, been waiting for years.
Who'd think we'd be using that for the Olympics, huh? Oh, it never gets old. That song has so much more application than it ever did back when they first played it. All right, so, Lyle, I got a question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so now the push is for paper ballots. Which I'm not opposed to at all, but I remember when you guys were doing all of this in Arizona because of the 2020 election. I think it all happened in 2021, but you had fraudulent paper ballots, correct?
Yes.
And so recounting the paper ballots didn't really solve your problem, did it?
Well, it's more complex than that.
I just want a yes or no answer, Judge. Can you make him answer yes or no? Permission to treat the witness as hostile? I've stayed at a Holiday Inn Express, too.
Wow, this is, Bill, from now on, I'm not sure about being the junior varsity guest anymore.
She waits for the last 10 minutes to really.
And then pantses him right there, out on the field. Boom!
Talking about third.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay, well, so, no, for real.
No, I know you are. I know. there is a process that was not followed. You realize we did paper ballots for 100 years or so
right.
in America. In fact, if you look at the last election in Florida, it was all done by paper ballots, and they counted them and machine. They went in and did the machines, but they had redone their machinery. They did away with Dominion, and they changed their whole apparatus, and they had their vote tally and their official results that night. Now, that's Florida. They're a lot bigger than Arizona. But what they did is they showed that you can come in on election day, fill out your ballot in paper, put it in the bin right there, a clear bin, by the way, a clear view bin that is monitored both by cameras and by a poll worker. And before you got to vote, you had to go in and prove citizenship. Let me, we don't have the time here today to get into all this, but the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, that's a liberal area, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals just ruled last week that it was legal to demand citizenship for voting, that you had to prove citizenship, that it was not illegal or racist or any of the other crap these socialists want to throw at you. And that ruling was, I don't know if you can hear me, I'm trying to pull up something. That ruling was part of what Mark Fincham brought together, and I don't have it in front of me. When you know that. Just when I need it, I don't have it. But I can send it to you if you want to post it.
Yeah, sure. We can put it on the page for today.
Yeah, for the front page of it. I will send it to you. The Ninth Circuit ruled that it was constitutional, it was not bigoted and all the other stuff, to request that the person coming forward to vote had proof of active citizenship in the state or county, if you will, that you're at, in the state and as a United States citizen. Now, that just came out a week ago Friday. You probably never heard anything about it on any of the news anywhere. I will send you the front page of it, and then you can look it up. But they just ruled on that. Now, it's taken 4 years. That was filed, and it's worked its way through the process, and it's been denied, kicked out, put on appeal. I mean, they've just continued. George Wentz, who's a phenomenal attorney, and I've known George for years, and Mark Fincham, they fought this thing, and they did not give up, no matter how many snowballs were thrown at them, if you will. And the Ninth Circuit just ruled. Now, going back to what you're asking, it is proper to come into a selected, certified, designated voting center, made sure that you're registered to vote, that you are a citizen and have proof of citizenship, and then you get your ballot and go over and vote by hand like we used to.
Sure.
And then that ballot has walked over to one of a couple of different boxes. I'm going to call them boxes. But they are clear.
Yeah, so you can see what's going in them. Well, like here, everyone in the universe gets a ballot mailed to them since the pandemic caused everybody to have a ballot mailed to them. So I guess my thought is it doesn't really do a lot of good to count the paper ballots if you can't verify the paper ballots are legit, like that they've gone to actual people that should be voting and that they're...
Right, so that's why it's been argued that only in-person voting be returned. And I'm going to tell you, in 2024, there are states that are moving in that direction and have already moved in that direction. Florida is one, Texas is another. I'm not saying all 300 and some odd counties in Texas, but a lot of them are. Pennsylvania. Georgia is trying to do that. They're being batted down right now. Wisconsin, I've had phone calls from Wisconsin. They're looking at doing just that. So there is a movement definitely in counties to reestablish that form of voting, to do away with a lot of the shenanigans and to maintain court security, ballot security, I should say.
Sure.
And I don't know if I answered your question. See, here's the other thing. I wrote this in an article. I write for Substack. I think, Aaron, you get my Substacks.
Yeah, I do.
And one of my articles I wrote, it's States Are Sovereign, and that was the title of the article. And it was, I wrote it on April 8th. So what is today? July? So April, 4 months ago, April, May, June, July. April 8th, states are sovereign. And that was one of the big arguments, that the state does not have the authority to do this and do that, blah, blah, blah. What I wrote was, the contract, the Constitution, is between the sovereign states, the state, and the federal government, is a creation of the contract and not a party. So the federal government is a creation of the states. They're not a party. This has a lot to do with who's really in charge here. Well, it's really the states, and they don't want you to know that. When the federal government steps outside its boundaries, since legally speaking, we are a constitutional republic and not a kingdom or a democracy, our remedy lies with the states reasserting their sovereignty and taking responsibility for the power originally delegated to them by we, the people. The states have an obligation to protect the people from an abuse of power by the central government. This is accomplished when the states step in between the central government and the people to maintain the limited power of the central government. And I'll send this to you also, and maybe you consider posting it. And then also the Ninth Circuit, a ruling that just came out. Excuse me, I still have that frog. And then I sent you this morning a copy of my book that's coming out, Our Forefathers Truly Appealed to Heaven. And I'm hoping you'll post that on your website.
We always have that. We have that on all the pages that we do with you.
Well, and I thank you.
And you should know that because you should be looking at our site all the time.
Hello? Hello? I couldn't hear. There was a disruption. For junior varsity players, the insignificant people
on the show. You have your own tab, for heaven's sake. I gave you a tab.
Well, the reason I'm promoting that is because in my little book, is this quick reading little 25-minute book. It's out on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, all the Walmart and all that. What I'm showing people is that our foundational principles are clearly under assault. They want to do away with the Constitution. They want to redo the whole makeup of this nation into a Marxist society and collapse it into the New World Order. And that's what's going on with the voting process. And that's what we uncovered in 2020. And the gentleman who came forward, as I mentioned, I did not mention name and all that, but we verified everything he said. He was a National Guard officer, and he was in charge of all coordination of that four-day voting process. His credentials are impeccable. He died 2 years ago, but his information we've got, and it showed that this was a very sophisticated, multidimensional, planned coup. And I am not a conspiracy theorist. And we and others have been proving this step by step for the last 4 years. Different states have been coming forward and pushing back. Tina Peters in Colorado is doing just that this coming week, and that's why she was taken to court to shut her up. And hopefully, they're hoping to put her in prison, and I believe not. But I believe when it all hits the fan here, there's going to be a lot of egg on a lot of people's faces. So this has been a big battle to get rid of, since 2016, to get, that's 8 years ago, to get rid of not only Trump, but what he stands for and the overall foundational principles of this nation. And it's coming down to it in the next 5 months. We're either going to save this nation by November, and then come January, if he when he takes the oath of office, or not. And I am not a theatrical person. I mean, I love playing with you guys, and you guys know that. But when it comes to stuff like
that. Yeah, but in real life, I mean, this is serious business. And for all those people that are listening, thinking, well, there you go. It doesn't matter if we vote. Yeah, that's the wrong takeaway.
I'll tell you what you do. You if you get your ballot in the mail, don't mail it back in. Don't mail it back in. If you have drop boxes and that's the least you can do, then all right, take it to a drop box. I would advise you to take it to the voting precinct drop box at least, but I would advise you to take your ballot that came in the mail.
You have to. If you don't do that here, you're issued a provisional ballot and it isn't counted for quite some time because they have to make sure you didn't vote twice.
Okay. Well, take your ballot and walk it in.
Yep. Yep, you can absolutely do that.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, we are into the last, like, 20 seconds or so, so we want to thank you for coming on with us, Second Stringer. Dr. Lyle Rapacki, JV extraordinaire.
Let's see if I can get that rating upgraded for next time, Lyle.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, not a problem.
Okay, and we want to do the other show that you referenced, by the way, in case people are like, wait, she forgot. No, I didn't forget. We're doing that other show, so call the guy and let's schedule it.
Let me see what I can do. He's got a book coming out. I don't know if he wants to release anything.
Tell him to just do it. We'll hold the show and we'll release it later. Lying is king these days. All right, you're listening to We the People. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. We could. Oh no, there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.